Praise be Jesus Christ. About a month ago, I had a homily in which I spoke about the media and about our relationship with Christians with the media. And I explained a couple things that I thought would be helpful for us, important for us to know, to be able to live good Christian lives in response to the sort of constant reality of the media around us. And I'd like to do the same thing, well, a similar sort of theme here today in the homily, and especially to focus in on one virtue that is very powerful and very important for us when we talk about interacting, especially with the media, and that is the virtue of prudence. Virtue of prudence. Now, I'm going to get to actually defining what that means and what that is going to, how that applies for us in a moment. But to begin, share with you a little bit of a story. It's an exemplary kind of story. It's from my own life. It was exactly this time of year, the week between Christmas and New Year, and the year was 1999. And at that time, a rather younger Matthew Kinney was freaking out about Y2K. Some of you are old enough to be able to remember exactly what that means, a number or not. So a quick recap of what Y2K stands for. So the idea was that in the year 2000, Y2K, what would happen is that all computers, everything that had sort of digital circuits within it, all of these digital circuits had a sort of a clock built into them. And when they got to the point where it would change from 1999 to 2000, 99 to 00, that this would somehow mess up every single computer chip, because all of them had these little clocks inside of them, and that they would all freeze up, and that therefore all technology would sort of die and just collapse there in a moment. And so therefore this would set off this catastrophic sort of apocalyptic scenario in the follow-up of this. So that's the sort of short version of this. Now, obviously, that never happened, right? Like, that never happened. It was absolutely unsubstantiated. And yet, during that time, in the year 1999 especially, although kind of leading up to it, even the people who knew that this was just fake and bogus, everybody knew about it. And there were a significant number of people who, for whatever reasons, found this to be something that really got inside of them. And they really found themselves deeply worried about this possibility. And I was one of them. At the time, it was a little bit before internet had become sort of widespread, but you know, there were other ways of being able to get this information through magazines and articles, books and publications. And I remember having some of those that were around the house, a number of them actually from Catholic publishers even, that had sort of things about Y2K, and they weren't there to be sort of like, hey, this is what's going on, and here's like real science behind it. No, these publications were, hey, here's the thing that's going on, here's what people are saying about this, and here's detailed instructions on how to be able to build a doomsday bunker in your basement. So that freaked me out. I remember coming to my father and asking him, having a lot, well, more life experience, and indeed, he had spent his entire life working with computers. I mean, like, he was absolutely like a person who could understand this. His background was computer science, and he spent his entire career working in information systems. So he understood this perfectly well. And I remember talking to him about it, and he told me that, you know, this was complete bunk, that there was nothing to this. But of course, I didn't listen to him, right? See, there's a little difference of what happens in the story. It's a small little change that happens but it makes an enormous difference. See, if it had just been the story that, well, here's all these sort of like computer parts and here's, you know, the clock, there is actually a clock in it, but it has nothing to do with like measuring like years and stuff like that in these computer chips. And, you know, to like learn the science behind that and to be able to understand it, you know, this idea that it would have been just been a bit of misinformation, an urban legend or something like that, that's maybe all that it would have been. But there was one extra little piece that went into the story, everything. And it was not that there was only this technological flaw, but that there were people who knew about it and they were suppressing the information. The nebulous they, them, they knew that this was going to happen, and they are dodging responsibility for it, and they are going to escape from the problems and just let the rest of the world burn, right? And because they are out there offering, suppressing the information and offering a false narrative, well, 17-year-old me could be able to question everything. Well, yeah, I hear these explanations for why this is not the case, but isn't that exactly what they want you to think? Isn't that exactly the false narrative that they are putting out there to, that's part of this? I remember it was actually during this week between Christmas and New Year's that I'd been reading a book, and it was, looking back on it, I can realize a science fiction novel, right? It was actually written by a Catholic author, put through Catholic publishing. But it was kind of a science fiction novel about, like, well, what if, you know, the sort of Y2K event happened, and, like, what would the consequences be, and how would that sort of, and it's the story of these people who kind of get these messages, they read the signs of the time, and they move out to rural America, and they become sort of like homesteaders, so that when the Y2K thing happens, everybody else gets caught up in the madness and the disaster and the chaos and the purge of it, but that they're kind of okay. It's kind of harrowing, but like, they're okay. And then they're able to sort of like start the country again, you know, because of all the other people that are gone. Now, again, I can look back at that now and be able to say, oh, that's kind of a like a science fiction idea, like an apocalypse. But at the time, I didn't recognize that. And to be entirely fair, the person who wrote it never put anything in there. This is a work of fiction. Please don't take this seriously. It was written straight, and it was laid out before January 1st, 2000, and it had a very fear-mongering kind of apocalyptic tone to it. I remember very clearly that it was New Year's Eve, and I was sort of anxious and jittery, but I was watching what was going on the TVs. And, you know, the different time zones, right? There are different countries that get to the New Year's first, and I remember watching it and realizing, oh, these other countries have gotten to New Year's and nothing has happened. I guess it's nothing. And so, I never spoke about it again to anyone because I was deeply embarrassed about sort of the way that I had been responding to all of this. Well, now except I've shared with all of you, so. Although I am in a way embarrassed, I mean, at this point, to the fact I can sort of look on it with sort of a, just a silly story from back in the day. But it was an embarrassing kind of experience. And yet I am grateful in one sense that that happened because it taught me a sort of wisdom, a sense and experience of how to be able to recognize when that style of sort of conspiracy theory thinking starts to settle in. And to be able to sort of recognize the feel of when that manipulation is beginning to happen. This sense of sort of practical wisdom, the ability to go through a complex scenario, And it's true, these are complex scenarios when you have fighting narratives for what is real and what is truth. These are really complex scenarios, right? This is where you need prudence. Prudence is the sort of practical wisdom. It's the ability to be in a complex situation and be able to make the right decisions, the virtuous decisions in that circumstance. And through this experience, I was able to gain some sense of prudence around this. So that, you know, as time goes on over the last 20 years, there have been different kinds of conspiracy theories that are, and I can sort of have a sense for that very quickly. You know, when people put forward their theories about flat Earth or about how 9/11 was an inside job or things like that, you can be able to recognize and be able to say, I kind of have the prudence to be able to recognize, I see how that's working. I bring all this up because, especially in the last couple of years, but especially during 2020, conspiracy-style theories have exploded in popularity again. They've become everywhere, and it's impossible to be on the, especially the social media, but even in some cases the mass media, which is really weird, where these sort of conspiracy-style thinking theories are out there. It's been especially around the two big giant events that have been happening in our country last year, the election and the pandemic, just huge numbers of various sort of conspiracy theories around them. But then also other ones that have been around for a while longer and have just gained huge traction, like QAnon and things like that, right? I'd like to then just offer a couple ideas of how we can be able to practice the virtue of prudence, especially in response to these things are inevitably going to run into if we have any sort of contact with media, social media especially, right? I'm not here to debunk and deprogram any particular one. There are people out there who do that, and they do it quite well. So for those who are looking for that kind of information, they can find the specifics. I'm not going into any specifics here about any specific theory or something like that, but the more general sense of how do we have that prudence, that sort of practical wisdom to be able to catch it and be able to recognize when it's happening. So kind of three thoughts, three reflections upon this, largely drawn from my own kind of experience of what I encountered. The first one might be this. It's that telltale sign when somebody says, well, they don't want you to know this, but here's the real story behind X. They're trying to suppress this information, but here's the real thing that has been happening. This is what they're not telling you. Anytime that something starts off with that sort of thinking, big red flag. Now, it's true, there are secrets in the world, and people do suppress information. Obviously, that's a reality. Problem with beginning with that sort of style of thinking is that it becomes a circular approach of thinking. Anytime someone would offer a response, well, hey, you have this thing that you say this is happening, right? Well, what about this? This answers your question or your problem or your issue with it. And what's the response to that? But that's what they want you to think. My father could come to me and tell me and he was absolutely, and he could come and tell me, hey, listen, here's what's going on here. But it's that circular thinking that says, well, of course, that's what somebody would say unless you are in the know about what's really happening. And so there's no way out of it. It becomes a self-referential truth. So big red flag whenever it has anything like that. Well, this is what they want you to think. And of course, this is all the clickbait, right? It's always out there, right? What else? A second thing that goes on with this. Is there a sort of a dynamic that often happens in these sort of conspiracy-style thinking that it starts off with some particular thing that seems, on the surface level, a technical, statistical, or scientific sort of issue, right? Well, hey, here's this flaw that's happening in all of these computer chips, and so therefore, they're all going to freak out when it goes from 1999 to 2000, right? Seems as though it's a technical or scientific issue to sort of solve. But here's the thing when you can tell it's starting to slip over into, again, conspiracy-style thinking, right? It very quickly moves on from the technical problem and starts to become all about the fears, panic, retaliation, and resentment that comes from that. To the point that very quickly, whatever is the technical problem that sort of incites this idea quickly gets set to the side, or is often replaced, or is often debunked, and yet somehow the narrative keeps going. Remember when I told you before that I had read this book that was kind of built on this sort of like Y2K scenario and things like that? Well, almost nothing in the book was actually about the sort of scientific, technological, how do you problem solve and deal with all of these things. It had nothing to do with that. It was about fear. We're 21st century, but here's these people going for becoming subsistence farmers going back to the 19th century. It's about fear. It hits that button of fear and panic. And also resentment and retaliation. It's us versus them. And we're the ones who can be able to know, because we have the secret knowledge, and we can avoid the terrible consequences, the tyranny, the whatever it is, the being lied to, because we know all these secret things. And all these other people, well, they're just sheeple. And they're going to get what's coming to them. And that's okay. There's often an undercurrent of resentment and retaliation. These exist and continue. The initial statistic or technological or scientific anomaly that it sort of starts it off disappears and goes away. Either it's sidelined from the actual narrative, or maybe it's actually debunked, and yet the panic around it keeps going, because it was never about the actual scientific thing. It was always about the fear that it engenders. That's the narrative, and that's what gives it its power. A third thing, last point on this, think about and have as a kind of a prudence in the face of this has to do with, well, what's the sort of person who gets involved in conspiracy-style thinking? You know, we have a popular picture in our mind of who that sort of person is. It's the crazy tinfoil hat guy, right? Someone who acts weird. Someone who's not smart. Someone who can't be able to sort of hold it together. Very socially out there. That's the sort of person who gets sucked into this kind of thinking. Or, on the other side, maybe it's the one who's manipulating all of this. And so it's some sort of smooth-talking person who can be able to sort of manipulate, and so therefore they're the ones who are starting these, like, conspiracy-style thinking, right? And yet, despite we have these popular images, who is actually the sort of person who gets to be thinking in this sort of way? Me. That's who. I'm not dumb. I've had, you know, grades, A grades through school the whole way. I'm malicious. I'm not a troll. I'm not interested in doing that sort of thing. And yet, demonstrably, pulled into this kind of thinking. And so are people that I love and respect, and I've seen it. So are the people that I interact with on a day-to-day basis. It's not the weirdos. Or maybe to take all of that and flip it around to the other door and be able to say, listen, we all know that we can grow in the virtues, right? Prudence, one of the great virtues that we need to have. Well, if we can grow in the virtue of prudence, that means that in some places, we don't have wisdom, and we are foolish, and we are prone to act and to think in foolish ways. And all of us have the opportunity to grow in a sort of wisdom. Okay, so one final thought before kind of wrapping this up here. Back in 1999, there was another book that was published. It was an encyclical written by Pope John Paul II, Saint Pope John Paul II, and he wrote his encyclical into the third millennium. And in this encyclical, he talks about how the church should be marching forward into the third millennium with a sense of love and of hope and of evangelizing zeal. Now, did John Paul II, was he unaware of the sort of problems that were going on in the world? He was deeply aware, and he wrote very strongly against the sort of real problems that were happening and the real systemic issues that underlied and the dangers that would be facing us as we moved into the 21st century. He was keenly aware of all of these things. But do you know what he didn't have the time for? Silly conspiracy. That's not what Christians are called to focus in on. He had the vision. Yes, they are called. Enumerate, call them out for what they are. And yet, he did not have a vision of fear for the future, but of hope. And he believed that God was going to lead his church into a third millennium of Christianity in the world. And he was excited about it, and he said, we need to celebrate this with a jubilee. I should have been reading that. That all of us might be able to have that virtue of prudence, be able to follow in the way of saints, Saint John Paul II, and being able to face future and the world around us, clear-sighted about the problem, and yet dedicated to Christian hope. Amen?